The following is an interview with Mr. Stanley Green of Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Mr. Green is currently an announcer at WDOR radio station in Sturgeon Bay. He has a great interest in the history of the Belgians of the Door County Peninsula, especially their religious background. This interview took place on January 10, 1976, in his study at his home at 122 South 7th Avenue in Sturgeon Bay. The interviewer is Leah Krieger. We're talking with Mr. Stanley Green today, mostly about Vlaat's history in the Belgian community. First of all, could you tell me a little bit about Vlaat's movements before he came to the Belgian community?
Well, he was born in Paris in 1854, January 24th. Perhaps not in Paris, but somewhere near it. His parents apparently were peasants who moved to the city and engaged in some mercantile or business enterprise. His father and mother both died, and he and his sister, he had at least one sister that he refers to, were given over to a Catholic organization for orphan children. He became, so he says, a protege of the Bishop of Paris. And he was going into the religious orders. And this was a time just after the Franco-Prussian War, when Paris refused to surrender along with the rest of France, and the Commune was organized, and the French held out against both the German and the French armies for quite some time. And during the course of the excesses, when the Commune took over, right at the end, when they realized it was hopeless, they started executing hostages, among whom was the Bishop of Paris. And apparently, this must have been a rather traumatic experience for Vlaat to have lived through this period, which was a terrible period. The city was virtually starved into submission. And then it was treated to the excesses of both the conservative factions who came in enraged with the executions, and also the Germans. As a result of his experience, he probably shook the dust of France from his feet. He went over to Belgium for a while and then headed for Canada. He turns up in Canada. The Commune was, this was about 8 years after the these experiences of the Commune. He entered St. Laurent. It's a seminary near Montreal, and he studied there for 3 years. Apparently, he was a very good student, very interested in grammatics. Mm. But he was, he'd been upset. The Commune experience had evidently destroyed his sense of stability. And his religious, he was seeking to redefine his religious beliefs. And he became associated with a number of priests who had left the Catholic Church for one thing or another and become violently active against it. For example, now offhand I can't think of his name, but he was a priest who wrote the book attributing the conspiracy to assassinate Lincoln to the Jesuits. So that Vlaat came in contact with a number of offbeat characters. He ended up being the pastor, or at least the lay pastor, of a French Presbyterian church in Green Bay. This was in 1884. Before that, he'd been a Methodist, and then a Congregationalist. And in 1883, he came to Green Bay, and into the U.S. for the first time, and became a Presbyterian, because here was a French congregation of Presbyterians that needed a pastor. This was fine. He'd been a Methodist and a Congregationalist. Why couldn't he be a Presbyterian? But during the course of time that he was in Green Bay, he corresponded with a priest by the name of Loyson over in France, who consulted with him. He consulted with him, and Loyson advised him to look to the old Catholic movement, which was just coming into the fore then in Europe. He felt that here was a group that was taking the Catholic ritual and the Catholic dogma and just simply rejecting the authority of the Pope. And this was in keeping with Valat's French background, because the French were very strongly believers, well, I forget what the name applied to them was. They believed that the French Catholic Church should be a little bit distinct from the Roman Catholic Church, because the French tradition and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the old Catholics were more in keeping with this. You know what the old Catholics were?
I know that they were an offshoot that denied the infallibility of the Pope and various other Catholic laws.
I believe it was 1870, the Council, the Vatican Council met, and by not a unanimous vote, but enough of a vote to pass whatever it was, declared the infallibility of the Pope. Now, this was the first time this had been...
Oh, I thought that had always been.
No, it had been questionable up to that time, but this was the first time that the Vatican Council had laid that down as dogma. And this was outraged many Catholics, who felt that this was a departure from the old Catholic traditions. This was something new, an innovation. And they left the Church to become what they called old Catholics, not leaving the Catholic Church. They were merely continuing the tradition of Catholicism and refusing to associate themselves with these new innovations. And this took on very well in places like France, Switzerland especially, Holland, Germany. It's a very interesting movement. You should check the story of it sometime. Well, anyhow, Loyson acquainted Valat with this movement and suggested that here would be his solution, his spiritual solution. He could be reconciled with the Church and yet lay at rest all his feelings that he had against the Church. At this particular time, Bishop Brown, who was a very generous, saintly old chap, was very much concerned about the fact that the newcomers to the Western Hemisphere from Europe were losing their church connections, the Germans, Lutherans, the Catholics, the French Catholics, put in the wilderness or in new situations. They simply lost their church connections and they couldn't reestablish them, and they were drifting around in a sea of atheism.
Where was Bishop Brown at this time?
He was the bishop of the Fondulac Diocese, and he was living in Fondulac, and of course visiting Green Bay. And he was particularly concerned with the Belgian Catholics. They were very devout Catholics, used to an urban situation with their churches close by, with close contact with the clergy. By accident, they were induced to settle at the base of the peninsula here. Just by accident, they were planning to settle on the Fox River down by Kokona, which would have been a very desirable place. But they ran across a priest, Father Dames, from Bay Settlement, who was a Belgian, who could speak their language. This was to them very important. So the first group settled around just north of Bay Settlement. And then the second and third waves of immigration had to expand out into the wilderness of the peninsula because they could no longer settle in the close to established places. They didn't know nothing about the land to speak of. They had no money. They were afflicted with sickness when they came. And the church, the Diocese of Green Bay, had no money to spend on missionary activities. So you had a priest coming up from Bay Settlement or Green Bay who would penetrate as far as Sturgeon Bay carrying his sacred vestments and implements on his back, walking, and baptize and confess and provide a few sacraments at very irregular times. And when the people died, in order to be buried in sacred ground, they had to carry them on stretchers for perhaps 15, 20 miles. Down at about 3 miles north of Brussels, when a little church was, a log church was built there, the congregation had a small area of ground dedicated. You probably heard about this, and then discovered that they couldn't bury anyone in there. And they had to build a little wall around it and drag in dirt in order to cover up the caskets there. About 8 people buried there. They're still...
Is that still standing?
It's, the wall is still standing. I don't know whether it's as high as it used to be. It's 3 feet high now. Holand and his sister says 6 feet, but you can never believe anything Holand says. But the ladies down there in the area have cleared away all the weeds and the underbrush over it, so you can see it now from the road, and leveled it off. The graves are not marked. They put up a cross, and they're trying to locate the people who were buried there, and trying to put in order again.
Yeah. Can you see it right from Highway 57?
No, you have to go on County Trunk C. Yeah. It's about 2 or 3 miles south of Little Sturgeon. You take Trunk C into Little Sturgeon, and then you have to turn and go south before you reach the bay shore. And that was a road that figured so largely in religious history in the Belgian community, because there everything almost came to a head. It did contain at one time 5 churches, 2 Catholic churches, a spiritualist, and the old Catholic church, which is now an Episcopal church. But anyhow, the priests that were sent to minister to these Belgians were generally the offscourings of the clerical barrel. They were... Xavier Martin, who really knew, because he was one of the community, says in his Belgians in northeastern Wisconsin, the priests were hard to get, and when one came, he was generally a poor specimen of his kind. Some of them were so avaricious that they would refuse to bury the dead because the parents did not have the ready cash to pay for their services. Others were dissipated. Some were habitual drunkards, and it was not rare to see a row break out in the church during the service between the priests and the officers of his church, terminating in a regular fight in which the journey came out of the priests. Now this was really typical, and the lot in his little pamphlet on his missionary services in Little Sturgeon retails again some of these practices. The Belgians, the official Catholic history of the area, says nothing about this.
Is that the Normantine history, or which history is that?
This was the official one published about 1900, I believe, in Milwaukee. It covers Wisconsin. And these priests appear and disappear. And suddenly there's a break in the continuity, and then they reappear. But you can't find anything there. But if you go through the newspapers, it's really something. The priest running away with the choir leaders. They chase him as far as Cleveland before they can catch him. Bring the gal back, and the first thing, she's off to the priest again. Or heading out for Canada with the church treasury. For example, in our local newspaper, the correspondent from the Little Sturgeon area had a very nice little article one time warning the people about the priests, that you shouldn't trust your wives or your daughters anywhere near them.
You know what I heard? I heard that was some of the controversy why the spiritualist church was started, why many of the people at the that were in the spiritualist church went there, because of an incident with a priest and one of the parishioner's daughters. And I wasn't sure, you know, that sounded a little strange, but if it was true, what you're saying
about the
priest.
Well, some of them may have, but the spiritual church was actually founded when practically all the families in one of the Catholic churches at Little Sturgeon moved over to the, founded the Little White Star Church because of a contest between the priest and the Mr. Everett, who was the spiritualist leader at the time. Mm. Mr. Everett claimed that he could summon the spirits of the dead, and the priest contradicted him and said that these were evil spirits, not the spirits of the dead. Mm. And Mr. Duchateau, a Belgian who ran a liquor business in Green Bay, put up a purse of $1,000 for a confrontation between the two of them. Now, if the priest could exhort these spirits, exorcise them, and send them back to hell, he was right. And if the medium could produce them, and the priest couldn't chase them away, then the medium was right. And the medium showed up. They staged the contest to be held in the morning so that there would be no night to cover the any hokey-pokey on the part of the medium. The priest didn't appear. And there were hundreds of Belgians who had gathered from all the area around. So his parishioners went and dragged him up to the scene of the contest. And he refused to participate and denounced them for being associated with something like this. And then he went home, and the congregation just... Belgians were very reasonable, very hard-headed people. This was a contest. The priest had backed out. The medium was there to produce. So they just packed up and formed the spiritualist church.
Yeah.
And that's going very, still very active.
Mm.
And Mr. Everard, the man who was the founder of it, still attends the meetings of the church regularly.
Oh, he must be quite old by now.
He's been dead for about...
Oh!
But they have a chair, the chair there, and... he appears at practically every service and is with them, helping them along, advising them. And the other practical aspect of spiritualism, as far as the Belgians were concerned, was that it could do things for them. Because people so often die without telling where special papers are or... where they've hid their money. This was particularly true in the Belgian community, where they didn't bank.
Yeah.
Now, here was a method of finding this out, because you could talk with...
I can imagine.
And I've never attended one of their services, but I've talked to many people who have, and who claim that they've had converse with...
Did they say whether the conversations were allowed, or were they...
You ask questions of the medium, or the pastor. Incidentally, never refer to her as a spiritualist. The pastor is a woman now.
Yeah.
I tried to get her on a radio program that I have, and I had a terrific job contacting her, because you had to get at her through one of her trustees. And they just wouldn't let you.
What do you refer to her as?
Pardon?
What do you refer to her as, if not a spiritualist?
She's a pastor. of psychic phenomena.
Oh, I see.
And I could never get through to her, but finally I realized that she must be in the room where the telephone was being answered, because the fellow asked her some questions and he didn't cover up the phone very well. So I managed to think of a couple of challenging questions that he had to answer, and by answering them he would create some interest in her, and I got her to the telephone. Mm. And then I made a couple of boo-boos about I referred to her as Mrs. and she was a pastor, and I referred to her as a spiritualist, and it was psychic phenomena. So I never did get her on the program. But I think the worst case of this, before Balat came along, there was an independent Catholic church formed. A priest down in Nazaire had a running fight with his congregation. Half of them wanted him, half of them didn't want him. He was from Corsica. Mm. And I think he was quite a character. His name was Father Lisha. It ended up with one portion of the congregation got to church late one day, and they got his robes and proceeded to make a burlesque of the Mass, services of the Mass. So the rest of the congregation got guns and went after them, and the anti-Lisha people shacked up in the building that's still standing down there. Those there. The Rubens store. The pro-congregation besieged it with shotguns. They knocked out the windows. A couple guys were shot. They had to call in the police.
Wow.
This was quite typical. The violence up here in Sturgeon Bay, generally when they had a fight down at Brussels, everyone would come up to Sturgeon Bay to see the lawyer. And the justice of the peace would have cases involving fights, religious fights at church proper, where you'd have perhaps 40 witnesses one day testifying against the priest and 40 witnesses the next day testifying in favor of him, and then it'd all be thrown out of court. And in Kewaunee County, there was a case, and this involved Father Lisha. He was suing a man for cutting off the tail of his horse. Mm. Well, it was in a situation like this, a spiritualism. The Belgians turned to spiritualism. They were disgruntled with the priests that they were getting, and still they were devout Catholics in a way. And this was a situation that Bishop Brown had in mind. And his idea was to establish an Episcopalian mission to the Belgian community in an attempt to give them the religious services that they were not getting. Mm. And of course, this the Catholics deny. The church was always giving these people services, and there never was any question about them. These interlopers coming in when they weren't wanted. Apparently, some way or other, the lot heard about the possibility of this mission to the Belgian community. Mm. And he contacted Bishop Brown, and he was very forthright. He said, you send a Protestant mission to a Catholic community and you just haven't a chance. But on the other hand, if you send an old Catholic mission, you're not fighting Catholicism. But you're offering the people something that they will accept as Catholics. If you can give them the religious leadership that they need, they'll accept it. But as Protestants, you haven't a chance. So he persuaded Brown that the proper thing was to send him over to Switzerland and Bishop Herzog of the old Catholic Church, have him ordained as a priest, and he would come back and lead the mission at Little Sturgeon. Mm-hmm. And this was a sensible proposal, and it set quite well with Father Brown, our Bishop Brown, and he approved it, and he got the sanction of the Episcopal Church, and the lot went over to Switzerland. This was in 1885. He had 3 months training at the Neshota Mission, Episcopal Mission down in central Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Bern, Switzerland, and was consecrated as an old Catholic priest June 5th, 1885. In July, he was back in Green Bay, and in August, he was establishing the Bishop of Le Bon Pasteur. I suppose that means a good pastor, good shepherd. Hmm? Started in Little Sturgeon. When you get hold of his account of the mission, you'll find what problems he had. He came as a stranger. The Belgians are a strong, closely knit community. And a stranger coming in, the only link he had with them was the French language. A stranger coming in, and a stranger who was preaching a slightly different Catholicism than they were used to. He was ostracized. He was threatened. People just wouldn't. He finally got a family to permit him to use a log cabin on the lake shore. And there with a door as his altar, sleeping in one corner of the room, he established his mission. I think the important thing to remember is that Lot was an extremely big man. Now, he was not only a big man physically, but he was a big man in so many other ways. An extremely vital man. A man who would eat half a chicken. Just simply sit down and pick up the chicken and go right into it. And drink a tremendous amount too, although he was never drunk. But one of the things, of all the things, the attacks were made on him. He was never shown to be dishonest, untruthful, appropriator of funds that he shouldn't have. When he built a church, for example, they ran short of funds. The only heirloom he had, a gold watch, he sold that in order to get more money in order to do some necessary job. He was that kind of a person. He had no personal interest in this, other than an extreme dedication. And above all, he had charisma. He must have had. Because those Belgians, are not easily led, especially by a stranger. You have to be a member of the community, and even then you're suspect if you try to assume any kind of leadership. But the lot was, they speak of him as being flamboyant. That isn't true. He was perhaps overly dramatic. But this was his touchstone to the Belgian character. Here were people that were starved for leadership. They were starved. They had to live in little log cabins. No money at all to speak of. It was just a terrific fight to make men's meat. It got primitive life. And suddenly, here in their need, well, this was one of the reasons why they had, of the Chapel of the Holy Virgin, Robinsonville.
Oh, with
where
Adele
the Virgin
Bryce?
Appeared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know
that. This was probably the thing that saved the Belgian community. They would have gone to pieces. But the feeling that the Virgin herself was watching over them, they made an appearance there. This was one of the things that kept them together at a time when they could well have given up. And here was a man with all the capabilities of leadership, a warm, personal individual, a big man, a hearty man, who gave them color and romance. And his mission just simply wasn't a preaching mission. It was a mission of parties for the kids, where the kids mm-hmm. turned out, the people turned out. And when the bishop was coming to visit the mission, Vallat would meet him at Bay Settlement with a procession of farmers in wagons mm-hmm. and carriages, carrying shotguns and discharging them in the air and escorting the bishop back with flags flying, banners and shotguns going off. A tremendous thing, you know. Here suddenly was drama and color and romance in a colorless life. So Vallat just couldn't be stopped. I have a letter from one of the priests who was assigned to keep an eye on him at the time when he was in disfavor with both of the Catholic and the Episcopalian churches. This was an Episcopalian. And he's writing to Bishop Grafton, and he says, "Dear Bishop, you may be able to get rid of Father Vallat down here at Little Sturgeon, at the Church of Precious Blood, because he just went over to Dykesville and confronted the Catholic priest over there in a public controversy, and as a result, one half of the congregation has left the Catholic Church, and they're going to build a church for Vallat at Dykesville. And you may get rid of him. Please, could I have $50, Holy Father?" But this was the sort of thing, his mission really was alive. And it did things. The Catholic could associate themselves with it without too many doubts, because this was Catholicism. The only thing denied was a pope. And already, in the case of Father Lisha, who had been forced out of his congregation over to Door County and built another church, he had organized an independent Catholic church for a time, which recognized everything but the authority of the pope mm-hmm. and the authority of the bishop in Green Bay.
Yeah.
And he had such a